Welcome to Trending. This is Timory Millington. Joining me again in studio this week is Chris Mueller. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me back. This is starting to be a thing. I'm feeling kind of comfortable in this chair right now.
Awesome. As long as we play musical chairs in studio before we get started. Floating chairs, too high, too low. But anyone listening in their cars today can also find us online. We do broadcast live from the Christ Cathedral on Facebook, YouTube, and sometimes, depending on the day, also on Instagram and Twitter as well. So you can share us and see us in studio, see what those hosts look like.
It's always a weird thing. I always know when I look up radio hosts, I'm seeing like what they look like. I'm always a little bit let down, I'll be honest, because I've created these personas to go with the faces, and you see me like, I know why he does radio.
I'm not going to lie, totally had one of those moments. I remember driving on the freeway, I was probably about like 14, and there it is, this billboard, and it has all of these talk radio hosts that I recognize. I'm like, that was not what I was expecting, man.
Yeah, they just don't match the voice.
These incredible voices and people who have also taught you so much. I think we create this glorified personality and person in our mind of what they look like.
Yeah, or you have that really angry voice, so you assume it's kind of backed up by something, and then you see it's like Mighty Mouse. You know, it just does not go along together.
Well, you know what's interesting is we're so used to judging a person by the way they look anymore because we have instant access to Facebook. Like, hey, I'm going to talk to so-and-so, haven't met them before, what do? We look them up online sometimes.
Oh, absolutely,
right?
Facebook.com. But then you think back to a time like when FDR was president, people didn't even know he couldn't walk, right? Because all they knew was the voice. So, we've definitely come around there.
Right. Well, this week, speaking of judging a look by their appearance, we had the Academy Awards. Did you catch them this week?
I did not. I have an issue with award shows, just in the sense that, you know, like I have my real estate license. I don't think there's any reason anyone should go to the National Realtors Association award ceremony unless they're a realtor, right? And so you go to these actors award shows, and really it's like their industry awards. These are people who go to work, they do a job, and they maybe do it well, and they're recognized by their peers, and good for them. But it's not. I'm not that interested.
Well, I think that this is a general consensus of a lot of people today. We have seen a huge tank in numbers for the Academy Awards. You know, people aren't as excited to see those Oscar nominees as they used to. And I think it's a sign of a couple things. One, you know, how many award ceremonies can we have? Right?
Yeah, well, that's true.
And I think, two, look at what is happening in Hollywood.
No, yeah, absolutely. You know, from the people who brought you the Me Too movement, here's, you know, all these awards. And yeah, you know, I didn't see any of the films, right? And they're just nothing that was nominated was in any way appealing to me, except I think Wonder Woman won something for special effects, and that was a great film.
But Wonder Woman was amazing. If you haven't seen it, you should totally watch it.
Yeah, and I did see the Kobe Bryant short film. Cartoon. My son and I went to go see John Williams in concert, and Kobe came out and narrated it while John Williams conducted the score. That was powerful. Congratulations, Kobe, on your Oscar. But really, the rest of it, I mean, there's just such weird stuff that was there, or it was just things I'm not interested in. None of the movies I watch ever get nominated for anything, so I just, yeah.
Well, and I think that you bring up an excellent point to begin with. Usually, the movies that are nominated have something to do today with women's right, gender equality, something that was incredibly artistic, sometimes too sexual, provocative. Like the way awards are assigned often, unfortunately, are just, they don't line up with the values that in reality, the majority of Americans have.
Well, yeah, and so you look at the films that were nominated for Best Picture, and I think the majority of them, only one of them made more than $200 million. The rest were like a little, you know, over $100 million kind of thing. And that, you know, it sounds like a ton of money, but when you think of Hollywood, that's actually a rather small film. So what are they awarding? You know, anybody can make an art piece, but if it doesn't grab interest, if it doesn't move culture, then really what was the point other than for your own benefit? You know.
Right. And I mean, you know, one of the things that we can look at to see how movies are doing well and whether or not people really like them is look at the box office numbers. And even that, a lot of people can't afford to go to the movies. You know, I think a lot of people do splurge on going to the movies a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But I mean, look at Black Panther, Beauty and the Beast. They are some of the movies that have actually hit the all-time box office numbers at the highest level. And you see, these are movies that are family friendly. And a lot of these Oscar nominated, you know, movies that we see are not family friendly.
No, not at all. I mean, okay, so you look at a film like Wonder Woman, which came out, you know, and that was, it was a great film. It was kind of your classic hero archetype, right? She sees a problem and she rises to it. And by rising to meet this problem, she lifts everybody up with her, you know, and there's that classic thing. She's not a victim. She's not overcoming, you know, the nasty men around her. She makes people better because of who she is living up to being who she was made to be. Right.
Right.
That makes money. It has a great message. I want to bring my kids to it, you know? But then you have these other films. I mean, there's one nominated this year that was literally involved a relationship between a woman and a fish, right? So what is there? What is that, you know?
What is happening?
Right.
Well, and I think, too, you look at it, and I was talking to someone this morning. Man, it doesn't matter what Hollywood event is taking place. It's always politicized in some way or the other. And I don't want to get into the different political campaigns that are always taking place. But here's the deal. Sometimes I think one of the things that's amazing about movies is it can take you to a different place, or it can make you be provoked to think about things. It should, at least. But I think most people aren't really provoked to think through things when they see movies anymore. They just want to go somewhere else.
Right. Well, and that's been the strength of movies forever, the escapism. I mean, look, movies took off during the Great Depression.
Right.
Because it was an opportunity to go someplace else or to embrace an ideal that we didn't see lived out in front of us. Yeah, the Oscars, I go back to that. This is just a bunch of people who are doing a job and they're doing it well. But that doesn't mean that they have like wisdom from on high regarding our political situation, regarding men and women's relationships, running, you know, race relations or whatever it is. They're just people who do a job that is to play pretend on screen. It's not an easy job. God bless them. I mean, I'd love to have the job, but that doesn't mean that they, for some reason, have more knowledge or wisdom than you sitting at home listening to this show.
Right. And I mean, people are not able to continue to escape when each of the ceremonies anymore have some huge politically driven campaign at the heart of it. And, you know, you look at it and I mean, look at one of the people they brought up on stage this year. At the Academy Awards, they brought up Cecil Richards, you know, the head of Planned Parenthood. And the fact that here they are, they're on the back of Harvey Weinstein and just the huge Me Too movement that has just crashed into Hollywood and has woken people up to see what's happening. And here they are celebrating a woman who champions abortion and who was, I mean, Planned Parenthood, who was in the pocket of people like Harvey Weinstein.
Well, yeah. And I mean, you know, it is really sick because abortion is what enabled the roots of the scandal that caused the Me Too movement to take
place.
I mean, you go back to the golden age of Hollywood, and it was something that happened with young starlets, you know, that they would take them quietly to a doctor who would then have an abortion so they could continue their career or whatever, so the scandal wouldn't come out. I mean, we still see that today, you know, that abortion is the tool of the aggressor, not, you know, it's not for the freedom of the victim. It's the aggressor continue to aggress. And then, you know, you make a victim twice because there's someone who's been, you know, taken advantage of. And now there's someone who's also been forced into the murder of their child, you know?
Well, and this is the irony of the situation here. Cecil Richards is invited up on stage, you know, while they may not be presenting her with an award, that's a recognition of the thing she's doing. And it shows that she is in deep friendship with people high up in Hollywood, the elite, the people who have funding. Yet she claims to serve the poor, while at the same time, the people she's partnering with are not the poor. They're the people who are choosing to live a lifestyle that promotes elective abortions. And that's not abortion where, you know, you just have this dire circumstance and you're justifying it, but it's where you're choosing them for something else that isn't necessarily, I think, a reason that is justifiable to end the life of a child. I mean, none is, right? Not a single reason is, but in comparison to someone who might be in the midst of poverty, a single mom.
Yeah, I had not known that she was on the broadcast until you mentioned it just now, and it just reinforces I'm just really happy I never see that. Because I think we're foolish if we don't tap into the fact that there's an agenda, that the entertainment industry is not unbiased, that there are large portions of the entertainment industry that are pushing an agenda that does not jive with Judeo-Christian values, absolutely does not jive with my Catholic faith, right, the faith I'm trying to raise my kids in. And when you bring up as a hero someone who's not even in the industry, right? She has no place on that stage, you know, when you think about it. Why are they bringing up? Because they're pushing forward the agenda. They're making a celebrity out of someone who is a monster.
Right. Well, and here's the deal. while we're talking about this in the Academy Awards, there are good movies out there. There are good shows that you can enjoy. You know, I think of Wonder Woman was an excellent movie that came out last year. I just saw Maze Runner recently. You have Black Panther that's in the theaters right now. You have all of these superhero films that, I mean, are really being recognized as films that are family friendly. Are they perfect? No, but they're movies that families can sit down and watch. There should be objectively a good side and an evil side. And, you know, while we debate and talk about some of those elements that might be difficult to see through for kids, it's important to help them see that there are things that you can see being a part of the culture, but still separate yourself out from what is adverse to a godly lifestyle that challenges a person to grow.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. You look at the superhero phenomenon, and you can be down on it. I know there's a little backlash right now. It's popular to be anti-superhero movies. But you look at like this, the arc of the Iron Man films, for instance, where you see the Tony Stark character, and he's self-destructive in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And by Iron Man 3, he's really had to confront those demons, you know, all the things that brought him kind of to the brink. He's having anxiety attacks, all that stuff. And he had to realize that the suit didn't make him Iron Man. Right. Mm-hmm. If you're not Iron Man before you put the suit on, you can't be Iron Man. What a great lesson, you know, right. And to kind of see that he has to now, you know, commit to relationships. He's got to now commit to kind of vulnerability in those relationships. He can't always be putting on this mask. Right.
Right.
Gosh, we need to teach young people how to confront those different difficult questions. It's not a perfect movie by any stretch of the imagination, but it is interesting that, you know, you have that. That's so popular.
Right. And, you know, there's also this opportunity to return to showing those classical movies that maybe you grew up on and want to show your kids, want to show your friends, like go back and look at why were these movies so good? Why did you enjoy them? And some of the time you may go, oh, wow, 20 years later, I can't believe I watched this. Or you may go back and see, wow, this story was incredible because of this lesson that it taught and the example that it set. This is Tim Ray Millington. That is Chris Mueller. And you are listening to Trending. We will be back in just a bit. Welcome back to Trending. This is Tim Ray Millington. In studio with me is Chris Mueller as well. And we are talking a little bit today now about sons and fathers. It has been a topic, Chris, that has been so popular right now. And I think this is why. Here we have yet another shooting in Florida that took place a couple weeks ago. And it's pointed to the fact that we have so many homes that are lacking fathers. Young men are struggling, but it's about time that this topic has been taken up, because for too long we have been so centered on women only, yet at the same time, young men are struggling. And just look at the numbers, Chris. 60% of youth suicides are from fatherless homes. 80% of youth in prison are from fatherless homes. 70% of high school dropouts are from fatherless homes. 70% of kids on drug abuse treatment centers are from fatherless homes. You look at that and it is just staggering.
Yeah, it is. The numbers are so, they just slap you in the face, right? And then you look at our response, which we glorify the single mom. And again, if you're in the situation where you're raising a child by yourself, without a father in the home, that's a hard thing, right? But it's not the ideal thing. Like while we want to support people, we don't want to say like, oh my gosh, this is the ideal. It's not, because the numbers just bear out. This is wrecking a generation of young men. You know, 60% of youth suicides from fatherless homes. We have all these suicide prevention hotlines. We have all these warning signs and things. As a youth minister, we've gone to all these workshops about recognizing depression in youth. But now you tell me 60% of youth suicides are from fatherless homes, then you go, okay, well now I can really watch, mm-hmm. you know, and to see that, you know, we talk about the shootings in schools and gosh, gun control? Yeah, gun control. Okay, talk about gun control. Let's have that conversation. But let's have this conversation too, right?
At first.
Yeah.
I mean, think this conversation first. You know, people don't know what to do with guns if they don't know what to do with themselves.
Right. You know, the article that we were reading, an article this week, kind of prepping for the show, and there was one of the author said something really powerful. It said, society then proceeds to fix the boy problem the way you fix a dog. It sees that boys are inclined to be aggressive, so it forces them to be mild. It sees that boys are likely to take dangerous risks, so it encourages them to take no risks at all. Mm-hmm. It sees that boys are wild, so it tames them. It sees that boys are boys, so it turns them into girls. And the above has only gotten worse. So,
Neuter the dog.
Yeah,
neuter the kid.
I mean, essentially, mm-hmm. you know, and it's true. It is not. You know, again, we talked about the Oscars last segment. I mean, the Oscars was just hours of man bashing. If you read the, you know, Jimmy
Absolutely.
Kimmel's jokes, and you don't, you know, if you beat a dog down enough, what you're going to get is a very mean dog, you know, and that's what we're getting as a culture.
Young men are just struggling. It does not matter. And I have to even say this, even if they do have a good father figure within the home, that father figure and that voice has to be ever present and always kept in check, because the messages and the draw for young men today, it is so strong. And I think young men even struggle in some ways more than young women. And that's because young men have fewer examples. You know, I was reading this article, and it's what triggered this conversation this week, no pun intended here. But Matt Walsh was talking a lot about how this kid from the Florida shooting, he came from a fatherless home. And so he put out this article this week titled "Three Things a Father Must Teach His Son So That His Son Doesn't End Up Dead or in Prison." It is a fantastic read. I'm going to tweet it out, so make sure you pick it up and just read through the whole thing. Take a minute, because it should be one of those moments where we have to sit back and think, how have I contributed to this? How can I help make it better?
Right.
And who can I talk to help them think about this issue?
You know, and I think we spend a lot of energy as a society looking at young women in the adolescent years. You know, and I think, you know, Karen Carpenter's tragic death to, you know, eating disorder. And that really brought to light that young women are struggling with this, mm-hmm. right? But as a young woman goes through adolescence, there's a lot of visual cues. You can kind of see what's happening. And so we obviously take note. As a young man goes through adolescence, it's a more subtle change. Mm-hmm. You know, I my son is 13, and I went in his room the other day, and I put my hand on his shoulder, and I thought, oh my gosh, like, you're not a little boy anymore. This is a man. Like, and I, start, mm-hmm. and I pulled the hair on his leg, you know? That's what we did. But just because it's not as dramatic a change as say a young woman goes through, doesn't mean that they're not struggling with the same kind of identity things, like, what does it mean to be a man? You know, mm-hmm. What does it mean to be successful? What does it mean to be loved? How am I loved? You know, I picked my son up from water polo practice last night, and he took some time off when we had the baby and that. And so he's just getting back into the game, and he was just, you know, men are strong. But that doesn't mean that we're unbreakable. And he said, I feel like I sat on the wall a lot. And he was a little bit upset about it because he wants to succeed. He wants someone to tell him he's good at this. He wants to tell him or show him how to be good at it. He goes, he says, I don't need to sit on the wall. I need to play because I've been out for so long. I need to catch up. And I said, you're right. And so then as a dad, I have to then show him that doesn't mean withdraw. It doesn't mean quit. It says, okay, now you need to go talk to your coach, and you got to ask him, like, you know, I've been out for a while. I realize I'm a little behind the guys. How can I get better? What can I do? And you got to demonstrate that desire to the coach, and then you get the attention you want, hopefully, right? But you don't go home and fester. You don't get angry because they're not giving me a chance. You know, you don't get pouty because you didn't get to play all as much as everybody else. You got to own up to the fact that I'm starting at a different level and I'll get there. You don't have a dad in the home. You can't teach that lesson the same way.
Well, and I think that is just such a great example that young men need to learn how to be men by other men, you know, at the hand of other men. And that is so important in an age where there are so few young men that have true fathers present or who are willing to be present. I think a lot of dads just check out. They're busy at work. They're not thinking about, you know, what they need to do at the end of the day to help out, but they're thinking about how they can relax at the end of the day. And that's all of us. It's not just fathers. I think it's everyone. But I think that this is something that predominantly really is a struggle for fathers who are in the home.
Yeah. And I think men, you know, we talk about young boys having kind of been neutered by society. I think there are a lot of men who are in the same situation.
Absolutely.
And they don't know how to lead. Mm-hmm. Right. And so you get in a situation where it's easier to say whatever, you know, and just sit back and withdraw into whatever it is that dad does, whether that be reading the news or cruising the internet or social media or texting friends or watching sports. I mean, let's face it, we lost many, many fathers to sports. When really, no, you have to engage. You have to take a place of leadership in your home. You're not a dominating dictator, but you do have to be taught how to lead in your home.
I was just talking to a friend, and she, you know, has three little ones at home, I've seen this as a trend among, you know, new parents, newlyweds a lot, is that there's that struggle of how the two are finding that balance between being home, helping out. And she's talking about how her husband was basically, you know, giving up, you know, working when he got home at night. and not just giving up working, but to be more present. But the issue is that he doesn't know how to be more present. And so that's something that she can't come back and like nag him, right? Of do this, do that. But she had to help him see, well, how can I be present? How can I help? Because in my eyes, you know, I think you have it all taken care of, but maybe you need a break, or maybe you're just taking care of everything because I'm always working when I come home. Like, this is a balance. And it's so like, this is the struggle that I think a lot of couples have, no matter how long they've been together.
Right. And you take this, anything you can do, I can do better sort of feminism.
Right.
Right. And then, you know, young boys are raised with that. I mean, and I'm 42, but I was raised with that. Right. And you have this, you know, a lot of your tween TV shows are formed around the heroine. You know, a lot of your sitcoms, dad is kind of mom and the kids kind of, ha ha, dad's an idiot, you know? Mm-hmm. So mom kind of is raised with a chip on her shoulder. Like, I can do anything, right. Blah, 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 you know? And then dad comes home and he doesn't know where his place is in it.
Right.
And so it's a struggle. And I think we're all trying to figure it out because we've given away those traditional roles, you know? And again, I'm not saying we got to go back to the 1950s ideal where mom's at home with an apron on, but we do have to get some sort of acknowledgement that we need each other, that we both have strengths, mm-hmm. that we both have weaknesses, and that balance that we find between man and woman is better than the conflict we can inject right. into man and woman.
When you look at the differences between men and women, reality is there are differences. In women, bottom line, they're more relational. That's just part. We see as women another human person. It's just fundamental to who we are. Men, you know, identify a little bit more with systems. They look for fulfillment in things sometimes in that system rather than those people. And that's what's so beautiful about the complementarity between men and women is that the two come to work together to have a good flow, to have a good relationship, to see other people first, to not just be overwhelmed and consumed on a person, but continue to live, right? There's yep. that balance that takes place. And, you know, when we talk about this, boys are always going to look for something to fulfill that desire to go out. And a lot of the time they're just not, what is that something?
Right.
And who am I in the midst of that search?
Yeah. What is my great work?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to, and every boy and you know, every kid that, you know, wants to be a hero, knows their hero inside. And I was talking to my kids about this the other day and they're saying how all the stories are the same. And I said, it's your story too. You are that kid who seemed like nobody, but then found out he was somebody because mm-hmm. you are a son of the Most High King, you know, and now you go out to live your quest, right, in him. We all want to be tapped into that. And what we've told young men is, no, there's nothing special about you. You know, you don't have a great quest or a great work for your life. You're just kind of an idiot. You're going to need the women in your life around you to kind of take care of you.
You know? That is what's so frustrating. And I think a lot of men today have continued and said, okay, well, she can do it. Just say, okay, she can do it. She'll do it well.
Absolutely.
And women always will step up and do something well when there's something lacking. Women are just, I've got to say, a little more aware most of the time.
Well, and it's, but I also think that women are suffering because of it, because they're feeling alone. They're feeling like they don't have support around them because men haven't been taught to take a role in that life. So yeah, mom ends up having to be full-time work and then full-time kids. And then dad is kind of like an add-on to that whole.
Right. And it's not just enough to quote unquote bring home an income at that point because it's not all you do. You're present. You bring home an income for the sake of the family flourishing, for the sake of the family being well cared for. And this is what's so fundamental. So then the question is, you know, young men want to go out into the woods and hunt. How do we help them so that they don't end up shooting up a school? So they don't end up committing suicide because they're searching. So they don't end up doing drugs and drinking. Like, where is the answer? And I think that Matt Walsh really has some good feedback, three really great tips for walking down that path, especially for, you know, fathers helping other men to work on this. And also for moms, you know, not nagging, but providing this as an idea, thought provoking for your husband. So we will be right back on Trending. We will talk about those three guidelines for what you can do in your home. This is Tamari Millington, and you are listening to Trending. In studio today, we have Chris Mueller, Catholic speaker, very active in adult youth ministry as well. And we're talking about just fatherhood and sons and helping men to have their identity starting at an early age and not running off into the woods looking for something to do that is not good.
Yeah, you know, Matt Walsh wrote an article on this week that was, I would say, excellent. I think if you read it, you're going to see some statistics that'll open your eyes. And he makes some great points. And what he does is he gives three things that every father needs to teach their son. And I read them and I couldn't argue with any of them. The first one was we need to teach young men to take healthy risks.
Right.
You know, and what's a healthy risk? To me, it means we need to teach them to do things that they could risk skinning their knees or you know, when they're little, they need to have adventure in their lives.
Right. Whether, and it's, you know, skinning their knees, being embarrassed for doing the right thing, right?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, yeah. And I think sometimes today, I think we live in a time where, and I was really thinking about this, he said, take healthy risks, but he didn't give a ton of examples.
Nope.
And when I think about that risk, I think one of the riskiest things as a young man today is, and it ties into the next one, is to stand up for those who are weak.
Yeah.
Because teenagers make fun of everything. And yeah. I think that's because there's a lack of solid parenting. And so teenagers don't have a moral compass of what's right and wrong. And realistically, by the time they're in their teen years, they should be working things out.
They should be. I think it starts younger than that, though. I mean, I live in what was, I think a couple years ago, the second safest city in America, mm-hmm. right? Now, when I was a kid, I rode my bike everywhere. When I was in middle school, I would leave and just be gone and come back at sunset. And a lot of people have a familiar story. Kids don't do that today.
Right.
You know, they don't. And again, I live in a safer city now than I lived in when I grew up. But I think as we live in like this state of fear where we want to keep our kids wrapped in bubble wrap, we don't even let them play in the front yard anymore. Mm-hmm. And so now why is that important with the development of a young man? If he doesn't go out and explore, if he doesn't kind of push his boundaries, if he doesn't go do those things, he feels stifled. He can tend to get depressed. And you lose that sense of adventure where you're like, oh my gosh, I am so far away. I'm not sure if I know how to get home. But I'll figure it out, right?
Right.
You know, and I learned very quickly, there's this big church with a spire. If I could keep that on one side, I could get back. You know, and what is there? I'm never going to have to navigate home in the woods, but there's a life skill of knowing if I get lost, I can figure it out.
Right.
And I don't think kids are learning that. You know, so those healthy risks teach important lessons.
Right. Well, you know what's funny about you saying that? I grew up in the mountains and I grew up doing a lot of hiking and just taking off and hiking and, you know, hiking as an adult and bringing other friends who maybe didn't grow up hiking, didn't go off into the city, maybe were surrounded by a lot of women. We go hiking and maybe they get lost or they think they're lost. Oh, do we know where we're going? Yeah, well, yeah, like not perfectly, but, you know, that's north, that's south, that's east, that's west. If we go back this direction, we'll eventually make it back to the cars.
Right.
And, you know, it's simple to me, but I see people who did grow up in that city living, again, had maybe a lot of women around and present. It can be really challenging for them to be like, where am I going?
Right.
And that sense of direction, there's fear that enters in just hiking.
Right.
And to me, it's so confusing to see that. But at the same time, you know, it makes sense when we are in the culture that we're in today. And so I think that ties us into the next one. And Matt Walsh says, teach young men to be able to protect the weak.
Right. Yeah. No. You know, I tell this to my young men all the time. You know, you were given your strength to serve. You're given your strength to protect. You're given your strength. And my kids are kind of big for their age. And that we're a fine boned people, but we are tall. and you know, we don't think about that there's a reason for strength. It's not just to look pretty. You know what I mean? Like that's not, guys didn't get muscles just so they could flex them. They got muscles so they could be protectors, right? Not so that they can enforce their will on people. You end up, if you don't teach men to use their strength to protect, you end up with Harvey Weinstein.
Right.
Right. You use someone who will use his power and position to abuse, not protect. And so, you know, I are we teaching kids that if someone's bullying somebody, then you need to get in the middle of it?
Right.
We teach them, go tell a teacher.
Yeah.
Which is not bad. Right.
But realistically, this is the issue. They learned that for so long, go tell the teacher, that now they're 30, 40 years old and they can't even settle basic squabbles within the workplace.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
And I mean, that's an issue. But I think part of this is teaching them to protect at the weak. Matt Walsh talked about how one of his kids had this fascination with superheroes. And at the same time, he was extremely fascinated with villains. And yep. Today, it's so disturbing, Chris, because there is this obsession today about celebrating the villains. And it started to take place when, you know, I was kind of growing out of like that really like this deep love for princesses, right? And I'd see these pins at Disneyland, different places of here are the bad girls. I think that's just odd. And now today, these villains are just like glorified heroes almost, because they're a hero because I identify with a struggle.
Right.
But in reality, we should identify with the struggle of the hero.
We should. And, you know, what we've done is we've made all the villains are just misunderstood. You know, well, you got to look at their story and they're misunderstood and these terrible things happen to them. So they're not really a villain. No, because everybody has bad things happen in their life. Not everybody turns into a villain. Right.
That's and a victim mentality.
Right. And so often the hero is the hero because the bad things that happened in his life and then he rose and overcame that. Why aren't we teaching that story? Why aren't we lifting that up?
Right. And I think that it's so important to see that because when we allow young people to celebrate villains, when we allow to be like, man, this guy's just great, there's a point where, yeah, you can appreciate, man, and a villain is just so bad and he has a way about him that does make for a good story and you can appreciate that. But a villain is a person who picks on the vulnerable and the helpless. The hero is the person who defends the weak.
Yeah. No, it's why we like a character like Han Solo so much is because at first you're not sure if he's a villain or he's got those villainous tendencies, right? He's out for himself, but then he pulls it out, right? He becomes the good guy. And that's the story that we naturally want to be a part of.
Yeah. So then as a father who's raised young boys, one of the things one of the things I see is that young boys, no matter what, love violence. They love the gore. You know, in a time where we didn't have this zero tolerance policy, kids are literally being put into detention. They are being expelled for drawing pictures of a pirate with a sword or a person with a gun. And it's not that they mean any ill by it. This is something the kids are looking at and drawing and creating. And at the same time, what's happening is they're being punished. They're being, oh, don't draw that. Or that's not good to pick up a toy gun. How do we help boys to see that it's okay to be fascinated with these things, but there's a place for violence?
Yeah, you know, my 13-year-old was sent to the principal's office at one point. I think he was in fourth grade because he threw a pine cone. He did not throw it at anyone. He just threw the pine cone. And the principal called me and said, well, I've got Chris in my office. This is a very serious matter. I mean, you talk about this. He threw a pine cone. And I laughed. I was like, are you ridiculous? Like, what, are you kidding me? Like, we throw pine cones all the time. That's what boys do. Like, you know, on my retreats with our parish, I tell the group leaders of the boys, for your small group, go throw rocks at fish for a half an hour and then try to talk because you're not going to be able to do it then.
Pete is going to be on your phone office when you get home.
But you just, I mean, that's, you know, we're kinetic. We need to move. I don't think it's that boys like gore. It's just, they're just naturally, they're like deer. Like, we need to butt heads. We need to test our strength. We need to see, you know, our limits. And we like to be involved in that hero story. So how do we raise young men? I think as parents, we can't just be lemmings. We have to push back against the ridiculous, right? We have to teach them the responsible use of those things. And then we have to give them opportunities. So like, you know, what I've done with my buddies, if we've gone out to Joshua Tree to go camping with our boys, one of the things that my family does is every like fall, we do a trip called, it's called Pooping in the Woods, but that's, you know, cause we're men, we're camping. But we go out and it's with my brothers and their sons and then some friends from church. And we go up and we backpack and we do those things together. Like we are kind of saying we're going to protect these things because right. They're important. There's a sacredness to this process of becoming a man.
Seek the adventure, seek the difficult, take risks, go camping. Maybe you'll run out of food. And I think that that is something that is so great about what St. John Paul the Great did is he took people camping. He took them backpacking. He had mass on top of an upside down boat and rivers. And you look at these things and I can't speak highly enough. And I know you guys hear me talk about them often here, but the Community of St. John is a religious order based out of France. And they have a program specifically for young adults age 18 to 35, and it focuses on much of the model of JP2. You take on the monastic lifestyle of this religious order, but you go out into the woods. You go backpacking in Alaska. You go out into the desert for 3 days on a retreat in Advent. You head out to Colorado and hike up through the mountains in Colorado, like all of these beautiful things, and it takes a balance of nature, the strenuous, and it challenges you with incredible spiritual rigor. And I remember at one point, Chris, we were in the Badlands in North Dakota, and we had been out there for 3 or 4 days, and it was really hot. There's very little little shade when you're out there. I think it was the last day of our hike through the Badlands, and we got low on food. We had a difficult time getting out, and one of the girls was having, you know, like overheating. She was having a hard time getting up the hill, and I noticed that everyone was tired, dirty, you know, thirsty, hungry, but no one was complaining. We knew it was a risk. We knew we were all on the same page, and I what stood out was that lack of complaint, because it was risky. It was challenging. There was fear. There were all these different elements. But we were all there together and everyone was helping each other. And I think young boys today aren't prepared to suck it up when things get difficult. They're not prepared to not complain, you know, or support other people. It's just like, man, I'm uncomfortable. I'm hungry right now. It's been 2 hours since I ate last.
Yeah, this, I mean, I think it's broader than boys, that particular point too. Because I, you know, like I said, I've got a big family. We've got six kids. And it struck me the other day that there's nothing in our culture that teaches people that they're not the center of the universe the way that family does. You know what I mean? And my kids know that there's other people in this house who have needs, and they take care of each other, or we try to teach them to take care of each other. And there's an inherent learning in that. And there's just not a lot that teaches anybody that in our society anymore. Right. I mean, everything is centered around me, you know? And it's interesting. You look at our laws regarding car seats and booster seats and all that stuff. And you can't even ride in the front seat until you're like 21 now, you know? So you're just being chauffeured your whole
Wait,
life.
Wait, are you serious?
No, I mean, it's not that old.
I think it's
old,
like 15 or something.
But it's ridiculous.
It's
you know, like
12.
So you're a chauffeur.
Yeah. You're a chauffeur. The last one, and we'll bring it in on the next segment. I think this is a topic that is well worth the extra time, but it has to do with teaching your kids to worship God as a father, especially your young men. And I mean, the stats, Chris, are just so clear that when a father is a spiritual leader of the home, it changes the spiritual longevity of the family. And that is something above all else that matters. We'll be right back on Trending to talk more about fathers and sons. You're listening to Trending. This is Timory Millington. I'm in studio with Chris Mueller, and we are talking about fatherless homes, about fathers in the homes, and what more we can do to help young men grow into authentic men of virtue who take risks, who are men of God, who protect the weak. And we're coming up on the last point from this excellent article by Matt Walsh that I'll be sure to tweet out, and it's teach your sons to worship God.
Yeah, I can say with complete certainty that I would not have stayed as close to the church as I have. And there, you know, obviously I had a little period of wander in college, not long, about 6 months maybe. I mean, and my life has not been perfect, but I definitely wouldn't have stayed as close as I have throughout my life. And I wouldn't be as close as I am right now if not for the witness of my father. Growing up, I absolutely knew that God was the head of our household. You know, and that my dad's relationship with the Lord was primary, you know, and that my mom and my dad were in relationship with one another in the Lord. And so when crisis came, we prayed. You know, when we, as a kid, I remember we talked about moving a number of times to different places, and it was always, you know, praying for what God's will was in that. You know, I saw that reality, and it wasn't just we were following the rules of the church. I saw my dad love the Lord, you know, and live in that. And I saw God's faithfulness because of that. You just can't throw that away. And too often, I see it time and time again with students we bring up through confirmation preparation, that mom is so devout and dad is so not present. And I'll tell you what happens after confirmation, we never see that young man again.
Right. And never sometimes did. He's not even present when he is there. He's already tuned out because dad's tuned out at home.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's just the struggle that we see. But here's the positive side. It makes a difference in the lives, not just of your son, but of their friends, of their future spouse, of the women they date. When you raise up a son as a father, a son that is in love and obedient to God the Father. You know, kids are used to seeing, hopefully, their parents who are in charge with work. They're very diligent. They're very extroverted. They're leading. They're firm. They're the disciplinarians. But when they see their father humbly kneeling before God, when they see their father praying, they see that humility and that obedience, just as they're supposed to show that respect toward their father, they're seeing that their father show it to someone else.
Well, I think that you said that humility, and I think that is absolutely it. And again, even if you are not a person of faith, and I imagine you are, you're listening to Catholic radio, what demands humility in your life? You know, there's something about our faith, about the worship of God, that demands humility. It's saying, you're God, I'm not. You're the most all important being in the universe. I'm not. And if that's your starting point, you're going to be a better you're going to be a better man. You're going to be a better citizen. You're going to be a better husband because you realize that you're not the center of the universe. It's not your story. It's his story. And you're playing a part in his story, you know, and then you look at your kids and it's different. You say, well, I'm a steward of these children. You know, this is my goal is to get them back to their father in heaven. Just like I'm trying to get back to the father in heaven.
Well, it's a question. What's the first commandment? You shall worship one God, right? Like you have one God. And, you know, right now I'm going through the process of becoming an oblate of the community of St. John. So it's third order. And a huge focus in the order is these acts of adoration, making seven acts of adoration throughout the day. And that's that moment of humility, that moment of you're the creator of the universe. Like you are the source of everything, of my breath right now. Like you can destroy, you can build up, all of these moments. And I've been looking and studying, and this has been a course in my studies over the year, a theme of studying Old Testament sacrifices of, you know, the Judeo covenant, right? And you look and you're reading and you see like they are sacrificing bloody goats, bloody animals, these calves, these pigeons. Like what is the first thing they did when they go into the temple, Joseph and Mary with Jesus? They go and make a sacrifice. And it's a sign of the inward being. The sacrifice, the physical offering is one part, but it's supposed to be a sign of what we're offering up to God. And when fathers show that offering, that act of adoration, that changes their life and the lives of those around us. And it's a constant moment, like, man, humility over and over again. Like, I was just complaining, like, I feel so overworked right now. I'm moving, working, and like, I have been everywhere in every place. But that's actually a good thing that you can see you're exhausted for a moment because you can't do everything. You're not God.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, and Jesus models this prayer. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be your name. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Jesus starts by saying, Father, you are and you're holy. You know, and he starts teaching us to pray with worship of the Father, you know, worship of God. He worships the Father. And if it's good enough for Jesus, it's good enough for me, and it's probably going to be good for my kids.
I want to put a shout out to Radiant and Valiant Magazine, especially Valiant Magazine today. It is a magazine for young men. And it is something maybe you as a father could, you know, talk to your son about, like, hey, here's a great magazine. It seeks adventure. It seeks taking risks. It tells stories of difficult circumstances and conversion. And I think that it is just a really awesome example of a Catholic magazine that can bring about, you know, the opportunity to go deeper in your faith and search out more. And even just stepping out further into your faith is a risk.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially today, like teenagers just mock and ridicule even any type of religion.
I don't even know if it's just teenagers. I mean, I think that's just a secular current right now. Look at what happened. We talked this last week when Chris Pratt just tweeted, I'm praying for you, to Kevin Smith.
Right.
I mean, you know, the internet erupted in abuse.
It's incredible. Well, one of the movies that, or show, should I say, that I see coming out over the next couple weeks, I think the end of March, is this new show called Splitting Up Together. Now, I saw the title, Chris. I thought, oh, I'm not even going to waste my time. Just another piece coming out from Hollywood. Like, oh, well, it's something to me. I'm like, Tim Murray, watch the trailer. Well, I watched the trailer for this new show, Splitting Up Together. And what's interesting is it starts with making the announcement that this couple that's been married for about 15 years, right, has decided to split up. They're going to go ahead and go through with a divorce.
And they just seem so happy about it in the trailer.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Happy-go-lucky, no big deal. And they're going to do it together.
Yeah.
So one spouse one week will live in the garage while the other takes charge. And then they swap each week.
You know, I saw another story about this this week where it was an actor and he's on Broadway and I can't remember his name. But they had divorced and they're nesting is what they called it. And so the child lives in the home. And then mom and dad move in and out. And so the child, so that's just less disruptive for the kid. It was really weird. I mean, you got to be rich to have three homes, but this one's a garage. So it's a little bit more humility in that. But yeah, so weird. Like, and it's the best. The kids are still, it's happy. They don't mind at all. And you're like, I'm not sure that, I think you're painting sunshine on something innate.
You know, we've seen so many years where we've heard people say that kids are resilient. Your kids will adapt. They'll just make it work. Well, stats show they're not okay. They will tell you themselves they are not okay. Layla Miller came out with a new book this last year, and it is the voice of people who had grown up as a, you know, a child, a result of divorce. And to this day, they feel uncomfortable saying anything because they're worried that it's going to make their parents feel bad. Grown adults, Chris.
Yeah.
And these kids are still trying to make sure that their parents feel okay when, I'm sorry, but most of the time, the parents are sending the message that the only person you care about is yourself, and your your kids just have to adjust to what you makes you happy in your marriage and your sex life.
Yeah, it's funny when you look at the, it's not funny, it's tragic, but you look at the neuroscience and how the brain is structuring itself through those you know, elementary years, and the trauma of that separation can be something that you spend your life reacting to.
Right.
You know, and it's tragic. Now, you look at this show, and I was like you. I was like, oh boy, splitting up together. Here we go. This is going to be from executive producer Ellen DeGeneres. You're like, oh boy.
I'm sorry, even worse.
Yeah.
Just to be frank. I kind of want to watch first couple episodes to see if it rings true to what we're seeing in the preview. So here's what happens. They're announcing happy-go-lucky. We're splitting up, but we're doing it together. So then you see this 5-minute long preview, and you see them, you know, trying to work things out. The mom's struggling with boy issues, and she doesn't know how to deal with the boy issues, and she really needs a dad to talk to her son about puberty, and you know, she feels uncomfortable. And you know, like, there's this balance, and you know, some of the friends are saying, hey, like, we don't really want her to get together with someone else, we want her with her husband, which unfortunately I have to say, even among Catholic friends and family members, I've not seen them do this. I've seen them say, hey, do what makes you feel better. And I'm like, we don't believe in divorce.
Right.
There's no such thing. Why are you saying do what makes you feel happy?
Well, and tragically, most of the time, we don't even know until they get divorced.
Right.
Right? Because we've all become very polite believers. We're not family. We're just people who get together once a week to go through this, and we walk away. You know, like, it's, there's the family of God is not being lived out in our communities. And so when stuff like this happens, takes us by surprise. Right. And then we go, oh my gosh, oh, it's so terrible. I wonder if there's anything we can do. Well, it's too late, guys. You should have gotten in there ahead of time.
You know, you should have
been
aware.
Part of their lives. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that, yeah. I think that's so important. And that's what's different about the show, is you see the friend saying, but we really want her together with him. Now, Grant, in the preview, some of it's kind of putting, well, he's better looking, like, because the spouse, he's a good looking guy, he's fit. And so I think that's part of like what's making that look desirable for the friends. But what happens is, toward the end of the preview, it's really interesting. There's this point where the mom's basically recognizing she needs help, and she's getting upset because she sees that this girl's showing up at the guy's apartment. And what happens is, at the end of the preview, what's said is she looks at her husband, almost not husband, whatever you want to call him, she said, is it okay if I need you occasionally? And he responds, and I think this is the story of most marriages today. He says, I've waited our entire marriage to hear you say that.
Yeah. You know, that was a pretty powerful line there. You know, there's another one where she says, I was a good mom and a bad wife, you know, and gosh, man, I feel like that's on, I mean, it's a struggle in any marriage. I was a good dad, but a bad husband, you know, because we're so busy in this worship of children that we're doing right now, where we're driving all our kids different places and doing all the stuff and being great parents, we forget that the person who sleeps next to you needs you, you know, and they need you more sometimes than the kids do.
Well, and what does the Catholic Church, your primary role as a married person is to get your spouse to heaven. And yes, you're called to raise your children in your faith, but your job is actually not to get your kids to heaven. Your job is to educate them and raise them in their faith. Your job is to work with your spouse to make sure the two of you get to heaven. And in doing that, the result will be that has a phenomenal impact on your kids. And that sacrifice you show in making that your first priority while still raising your kids, that is life-giving, self-giving love that we see from Christ on the cross.
You know, and I think I heard this out of Promise Keepers thing in a stadium years and years ago, but the greatest thing you can do for your kids is love their mother. You know, and it sounds a cliche, but it's so true.
And one of the things I love hearing Matt Walsh, that he said, is that kids, especially young boys, actually need to see their fathers showing their mothers affection. And this is really important, something I remember they taught in our marriage and family class growing up. But when boys don't see proper affection within the right atmosphere, within the right place, when how much is allowed and how much is not allowed, you know, that makes a difference. This is Trending. We will see you next week. Catch the podcast. God bless.